back. This is No Direction Beyond, the Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm Vanessa Hoskins.
I'm Alexander Agunis, the Everyman Gamer.
I'm James. I write Code Switch.
And I'm Owen Casey Stevens.
All right. Thank you for joining us this week. This time, we're going to be looking at so many products that were just either announced or released for Starfinder. There's just a lot of things that we haven't had a chance to talk about yet. And so without a lot of preamble, I want to dive right in about one of the things that I know I'm really excited about because of the style of GM I am with like home games and things. And that is the Deck of Many Worlds. My favorite type of game, like as much as Adventure Paths are great, even those go off the rails. And I love home games and one shots where the players just sort of do whatever and the GM gets to adjust on the fly. And the Deck of Many Worlds is amazing for that. Owen, why don't you tell us about it?
So the Deck of Many Worlds is a really cool 110-card product that is the brainchild and hard work of Joe Piccini, although he also did a lot of brainstorming with a lot of people at Paizo. I worked at Paizo at the time he was doing it, so he brought in a lot of minds to give him ideas. But what it is, it's a deck of cards that allows you to randomly generate planets, and you don't just get it's a big planet with water on it. It comes with plot hooks, and it's got a set of randomizers. So you use different cards and you stack them on top of each other so that you get the primary information about one card, and then another card, which that first card points to, slides under it, and it tells you like what the primary sentient species are. And another card, which has 1 through 6 numbers on it, tells you like what the random tech level and what the random magic level is. And you're not stuck with those things. If you can change anything you want, but it's a starting point. So you can say, hey, it's a, and there are a lot of hooks for what these worlds are, right? But It's a high-tech world with low magic, with Lashunta and Vesk as the primary people. And then it'll have a series of plot hooks. So it'll say things like, there's a giant asteroid that is believed to be coming at it right at the moment. And there's a major festival coming. And it is run by a group of secret mafioso, just as random examples. And with all these different cards, you end up with at least hundreds of thousands and maybe millions of combinations. I bet they actually figured out exactly how many, and it's probably on the advertising. But it is a super fast and easy way, if you need the hook for a world, to just flip it out and put it together. And I've seen it used a lot of different ways already. One certainly is if your players do the Han Solo thing and they're like, okay, what's the nearest system we can jump to that isn't Absalom Station because we're wanted there, where we can try and get things fixed. Mm-hmm. And someone will be like, well, here are some options that are fairly nearby. And you can just put it together. But I've also seen people use it if they want to create their own solar system, even if they're not doing it on the fly, just as an idea generator, where you start with this cards and you're like, okay, I really like that. I'll tweak this. I'll adjust that. But with hundreds of thousands, if not millions of combinations, it is a great way to get some really iconic, classic science fiction, science fantasy tropes put together in ways that you will not have seen before because of how many different ways that can be put together. Mm-hmm. Both sides of it have useful information. I know that Joe worked really hard with Sarah Robinson, the creative director of graphic design over at Paizo, to make sure that it would get as much info as possible. And it's a really spectacular product. And while it has just a little bit of rules information, you could use it for any science fantasy setting you wanted to, if you were willing to adapt things like Lashunta and Vesk and other races and such.
That sounds so cool. I can't wait to get my copy. I want it.
Oh, did you order it?
No, I haven't yet.
And now I've shamed you.
I can't wait
to
get my copy, except I have to wait because I haven't asked for it.
No, listen, you don't understand. I got hit like by the double whammy of like books. Oh, gosh, what was it? There was a month come. Maybe it's this month. There's like like my Paizo subscription was much larger than I was like, oh, wallet. Okay, we could do this.
Yeah, you got to watch out for that, certainly. I know I've had some times where I'm like, there's just too many things I want to buy this month, and I'm like having to parcel it out, and then I have to remember to go back and not forget. Otherwise, people are like, well, don't you own this? Well, no. Well, it's sold out. No. Well, I was, but I want one.
It's the Darkland flip mats all over again.
Well, and God, you know, yeah, and you know how these, like, these Paizo fans are about their cards. It's always the condition cards and all the, you know, combat cards and everything. They just think they're just the best thing.
And they never want to give them up. You never find them, like, on the secondary market. And if you do, they're like $500.
You know, I should start investing in the cards and just set it like a crate aside.
For a really long time, I got one copy of everything Paizo made. And I'm not used to that not being true anymore yet. I didn't have to order anything. I got two copies of everything. I never had to worry about it being sold out. So I have not done, I mean, the PDFs are easy, but I have not done an awesome job of ordering myself copies of the physical products I want. Like, I saw a map recently and I was like, oh, where's my copy of that? Oh, I don't get one.
Oh. Yeah, the flip mats buy are it the like thing.
The rest of us. You gotta buy
like,
it.
Yeah, they're the thing that I always like wanted to own all of them. But like for me, a lot of the time, budget wise, I can't afford the subscription, so I'll have to parcel out and be like, well, this one's mostly just wilderness, so I can sort of just draw squiggles and those are trees. And then this other one though is like super detailed rooms and tech stuff in the middle of like a destroyed mall. Okay, that one I'm gonna buy. Yeah. You know, it's like it just depends on how much detail went into them. But
gosh, my buying habit just goes off of which maps Thirsty likes to use a lot.
Starfinder Society, yeah.
I like need that Thirsty. You gotta stop with this swamp, man. You're making me buy it.
the strategy you go with is you get the super generic maps and you get the super specific because it's really a pain in the butt to draw swamp.
Yeah. Oh gosh, and that scenario we did on Sunday where it's like this road is actually a mud mound. It's 15 feet tall. You have to have that on your map. It's like, no.
Yeah. It ended up looking like garbage. It is weird that the Deck of Many Worlds doesn't have a PDF only option, but it makes sense too.
Because they're cards, yeah.
Well, and they're cards that specifically are designed to work with each other, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, each card, for example, says, here's the religion and the technology and the magic, and is it more law, chaos, more good, evil? And you pay that over another card that has up and down arrows. Mm. So those two cards together will tell you, is the tech level higher or lower than average? Is the magic level higher or lower than average? Is the impact of religion on the society higher or lower than average? Is it more lawful, more chaotic?
Sure.
Just one card won't give you that information. You have to have the multiple cards to look at it. And they do a whole sample world. I mean, you overlay like four or five cards to get the total effect. And like with the races are on the edges of cards. Mm-hmm. So you put two of those under your main card. So you're never saying these two races and this one card are what you get. It's always you have two different cards that you put together, so you get a random selection of two, and that's how they keep it really to have a huge random number of various possibilities. It's really an impressive design just from the layout aspect, the amount of randomized information they've managed to put into the system without depending on things like dice.
But here's the real question, Owen: is one of the options on one of the cards noir?
So I presume so, since there are, you know, Screedreep and Mego, but I haven't gone through all 110 of them. You know, the otter folk are represented, and after that, I don't know if anything else matters.
I don't want to go to the Mego planet. Okay.
Jason Keeley is in chat along with our buddy Parham, and he says, "Heck yeah, noir in the deck." And if you are watching this on Twitch, he's just put a link in the description that lets you watch Paizo demonstrating how the cards are used.
Yes, absolutely. They did a great demonstration on Starfinder Wednesday that showed how the cards put together, and they had some people give suggestions for how to use them. It's really cool.
Well, that is definitely a deck of cards I'm going to own, along with another deck that's going to be releasing soon, which is the combat reference cards for space combat, which I think is amazing.
I can't wait until we have a group of those at our table so James could just throw it at Mike Barnett. It's going to be great.
Oh my God. I'm going to throw it at so many people. No, I don't know what your checks are. Figure it out.
Who are you?
I'm running these other things. You worry about your ship. There's five of you for that ship. You're adults.
The really nice thing about the Starship Combat reference cards, which won't be out until August, is that they include all of the essential Starship rules from the core rulebook, the character operation manual, where we added some new roles and new tasks, and the Starfinder Starship Operations Manual, which currently isn't even out yet. So if you're used to having information spread out over three books, or you realize that there's a third book coming, this will have that essential information that you need all in one place. And I think that's going to be a huge help for knowing what your rules are and what the core checks are and your combat options, etc. I think it's going to make it much easier and faster for some people to get Starship Combat right, especially people who don't do it very often. As with any subsystem, right, the first like two dozen times you do Starship Combat, it can be a little daunting. And when it was all in one place, everyone could just open up their core rulebook and say, okay, here's the Starship system, here's what a gunner does. But now if you're like, well, I want to switch from the gunner to the magic officer, okay, now I'm shuffling between two different books.
Yeah.
And we don't even know necessarily everything that's going to be in the Starship Operations Manual. So all these operation manuals are coming out with new rules. I think it's really smart that they waited on this product until they could put what I presume they foresee as being all the major expansions of that Starship Combat system for the game in one place. From here, I suspect it'll just be minor things if they do anything.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a really smart... that way, when someone, like you were saying, it's like, I'm going to play the magic officer. Here's your small deck of cards. And then you can just look at, like, what do I want to do?
Yeah, here are my tasks.
Flip to the task that you want to do that turn, and then you can just take care of it and then flip for the next turn. I know that when, you know, Starfinder first came out, our local venture officers and Venture Corps put together a really nice, like, laminated sheet that had all the rules on it. But it was, like, this big clunky thing that you had to put on the table. And those Starship maps are already, like, you know, the space maps are already so huge. And so it's kind of a clunky thing. Then, of course, all the DCs changed, and those all had to be thrown away and new ones be printed. But but this is just going to make it so much easier just to be like, all right, here's your five cards, you're done. And I think that's really cool.
I mean, it gives me hope that when the Pocket Edition comes out, at least we get DC updates. Hopefully.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure they'll have the correct
crossing DCs. Fingers. I'm, like I said, I'm just really looking forward to it. At our lodge for Starfinder Society, we own, it's like, it's basically me and James are the only people who run scenarios with starships in them.
Willingly. I know sometimes other people will do it and not realize it and then be very upset.
Yeah. Yeah. James and I are like, oh yeah, sure. This will be great. Whatever. It's fine. It's just a starship. And like everyone else is like, oh, I don't know what to do. It's like, and now we'll be able to just throw literally throw the deck of cards at them.
Yeah. Like, here's my super secret GM quick Starship Combat. If you are GMing enemy ships for players, just roll a dice. If you roll over like a 10, you've done it. Like AC is a little bit different, but with how the DCs are scaled, unless you really roll a stinker, you're fine. Or they're in the wrecked or that wreck state. So just keep it moving.
James is also really fun. He's like, tactics? Nah. I'ma shoot you.
I did great tactics. I went behind the thing that did the thing that protected them from the other thing that you guys are shooting. You know, I'm big brain, 9,000 IQ. You don't even know my tactics. Okay.
Your tactic is shoot shield till dead.
Daka.
In chat, Cryptwalker 76 says that we need a Starfinder book that abbreviates as GET so we can come get some. And this is a great time to tell everyone that this is recorded live in front of a Twitch audience. So if you want to join us every Wednesday night, No Direction has some fantastic live content to join. You can join us in chat and converse with us, just like Cryptwalker 78 and Jason Keeley, who has just confirmed that the Noir is on card number 28 of the Deck of Many Worlds. So they are in there.
So Jason, since you're listening, Galactic Equipment and Technology, GET.
There you go.
That's a free one.
That's perfect.
Wow. And that's even like the perfect name for a sequel to like an armory style book.
Yep.
Yeah, when we get our mechs, right? Right?
Right? Right?
I mean, you're probably never going to get mechs, so
good luck with
that. So there are mechs and there are mechs, right? Will there be official mechs? I bet there will. I sat in on meetings where we all sat around and said, yes, we have to do mechs at the right place at the right time. But I mean, third parties have already done mech rules, and there are mech rules that'll be coming out, you know, from me sometime soon. So if you want mechs in Starfinder, and we're not talking about official only, options exist. But I'm betting there will be a fit. We've got a whole planet of kaiju. I just can't imagine we won't have giant mecha to fight them with.
Jacob Blackman is proposing that we'll get mechs in Owens 52 and 52.
Yep. Armored Aces will be mech rules for Starfinder, Pathfinder First Edition, Pathfinder Second Edition, and 5e, and that's out in March.
Wait a second. How are mechs going to work if you're in Pathfinder like Second Edition? That's fantasy.
Well, sure, but you can have fantasy mechs. There are all you need for a mech is to have a large, roughly humanoid or animaloid form that is armored that you get in, that you run around and hit things. The apparatus of Qualsh from old D&D is a mech.
Yeah, or the crab apparatus.
The crab apparatus.
Yeah.
Okay, okay, you've convinced me. I need to take that product and other things I know and make like a Final Fantasy setting. But
I just need James to take that product and make me the Recreators RPG that we so desperately need.
Oh my god. I am still going through my Big Eye Small Mouth fourth edition rulebook, and that's one of the things on there. Also, there's a couple his fantasy mecha animes that came out in the last couple of years. Totally. I'm just trying to remember them.
The one thing
there were five star stories back in the day, so it's not a new idea by a long shot.
Yeah.
The one thing I always wonder about though is there's a lot of in the product there's a lot of discussion about mechs. What's a mech versus what's power armor? How can you tell? What are the rules? And honestly, I think it's one of those things that's like Chicago versus New York pizza, where everyone's going to have their own opinion on what constitutes one or the other. But
size.
Okay, so size, you bring up an important thing. So how big are these things going to be on the flip mat then? Because when I think mechs, I think huge plus, they're mostly going to be colossal. And you can't fit that on a pawn base, they don't go that big.
So this is just my opinion. I don't think mechs work unless they're in the same scale as Starship Combat. But that's my opinion. Don't take that. But so, I mean, when I think of a mech battle, I think of Mobile Suit Gundam Iron-Blooded Orphans, where the Gundams are attacking enemy starships. And that is what I personally would want in a mech system.
Mechs are everything from Garlands from Megazone 2 through the movie, which was something else, and it also came out as Robotech, which is basically just an oversized motorcycle that you can walk around with, all the way to arguably the Macross starship itself, since it can take a humanoid form and punch things. Those are sort of two of the core arguments that it is a mech. It has a punch attack. It punches someone with another ship, but it's still a punch attack.
As long as you can punch something, okay.
Tanks don't punch.
In D6 Star Wars rules, for instance, they had scaling rules where they said, hey, here's a personal fighter scale starship, here's transport scale starship, here's capital scale starship, and this is what happens when you translate between them. There are absolutely ways to make scaling things work. You just have to decide what do you want to focus on and what does a group want to play with, right? In Robotech and Gundam, both, there's a difference between a mecha and a starship. They're working on the same scale, but normally a starship is more likely to win, and you need a bunch of mech to take one out. And that's just like fighters in World War II versus battleships and aircraft carriers. So it's a tough nut to crack, and that's why I think Paizo hasn't done an official rule set yet. One of the advantages of doing a third-party set of rules is you can say, hey, here are my assumptions. If you don't like those assumptions, go get a different third-party product. For an official product, Paizo really has to support a specific thing, which they then should properly say, okay, and here's our story with mechs, and here's the adventure path that includes mechs, and here are some mech-related options for all the different classes. And it's really a lot of work to introduce them into the game if you want them to be something different than here's a set of size large powered armor. Here's a set of size huge powered armor. Because those are things that we already have in the game. But they don't scratch that itch for people that want a mech-based campaign.
So, ready? Pitch. Starfinder RPG Adventure Path. Mobile Suit Golem. And then you get the Paizo Golem as your mech.
I don't know. Seems like there's too much MSG in that, but how do I know?
Mobile Suit.
I like it. I would play that.
You'd play MSG?
We have to get through Attack of the Swarm first. Then that can't happen until after the kid comes.
Yeah. Eventually.
All right, cool.
It'll probably end up being Age of Ashes and then Attack of the Swarm.
Fantastic. Well, let me ask you this. Will you get any use out of the Alien Archive 3 pawn box in either of those games? Probably.
Probably. I like the Alien Archive 3.
Yeah, well, it's a great book. I really like it. There's a lot of good stuff in there. Archive, you know, the Pawn Box coming out in March. Not a lot to say about a Pawn Box, but definitely worth mentioning on the show. It's once again, you know, cardboard, pre-done cardboard cutouts, a little plastic on it, sticking right into a little plastic base. Boom! It's the least expensive way to get miniatures for your games, especially if you're doing like society games or something where there's new types of creatures every week. Mostly pulled right out of the Alien Archives, and if you keep up with those, that's a lot more efficient way. We were talking about earlier about affording all this darn stuff than trying to come out with just the right plastic mini for everything, especially because sci-fi minis are few and far between these days.
Well, it's science fantasy minis in particular are are rarer than just straight up fantasy.
I was trying to find a mini for my dragonkin, and you know what? Like, there are tons of dragonborn, like humanoid dragons, but like, I just want a dragon with a gun. You can't find that. It's like, come on, give me my dragon with a gun miniature word. Whiz kids!
Yeah, I have a Formian and a Gabrani, and I'm just out of luck.
Yeah. Well, one thing I think that's going to be fantastic is the relaunch of Hero Forge, though. And this wasn't even on our list, but this is certainly relevant. Hero Forge has always been very fantasy focused, just like a lot of the miniature market. Mm-hmm. But the new release, they have all sorts of like insectoid bodies and aliens and all sorts of stuff on their list that they're going to be adding to their repertoire. And I think it's really going to blow it up for Starfinder miniatures.
Did you see that one of the goals is adding multiple arms? They're mm-hmm. this much closer to Skittermanders.
Yeah.
You just need to give me a fuzzball alien race and then let me add my multiple arms and I'm good.
Right. I think we're getting really close, and I'm really excited because for me, I like to have, even if I'm playing like an online game, I like to have a physical miniature for two reasons. Yeah. One, if we ever get a chance to, instead of playing online, like, hey, we meet up at a big convention and play in person, I want my mini. I don't want to be like, well, we always play online. And I like that little totem that I can just like sit right in front of my monitor. And then as I'm playing, I'm just like, that's her. That's my character.
And I think like, oh, hail the magic mini, like SpongeBob.
Yeah, and then
it's nice to have that representation, even if it's just for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you can retire them when they're done.
Mm-hmm.
Place. As long as Alien Archive 3 has the Brenneri, the otter people, and the dromedarians, I'll be fine because I love the Brenneri and I want to set that dromedarian pawn on fire.
So weird. You usually hate animal people.
I know. They're just adorable.
The otter folk are just too cute to hate.
They are.
Dude, they have their little magic rocks and they pet them and it makes them happy. And it's literally a special power. It's amazing.
It's so stupid.
Somebody needs to make Louise like director of ancestry Moe. Design for Moe.
But those dromedarians are it just reminds me of my dad used to smoke Camel cigarettes and it just reminds me of Joe and I don't like it hurts my eyes. Not actually, I just
well, I mean, it when you're doing a setting where you have specifically said it, we literally more than once have considered including hyper-intelligent shades of blue in the bestiaries as a playable species, right? I mentioned that every time, and they never get just shut down immediately. It's always, all right, we'll put that on the list, and we'll see when we're doing what we think is important, does that end up making the cut? So you're talking about wanting to hit a really wide range, right? This is much more cantina scene of Star Wars with all the weirdos from werewolves to the
otter people.
Well, sure. I was gonna go for the elephant head folks whose name I can't remember because I haven't actually written Star Wars recently.
Yeah,
I trust me, they have a name.
Everything in Star Wars
when,
does.
When you're doing something that broad, you've got two choices. You either stay really conservative, in which case there are going to be things people want you don't give them.
Mm-hmm.
Or, especially when you're talking about the third Alien Archive, so no one thinks this is core and you have to put it in your game, you go really a little wahoo and you say, all right, we're going to go at least out to the boundary. And that means that for some people, you're going to do things that are a little beyond the boundary and they're not going to be fans of it.
Like psychedelic walrus people that worship the pain god?
Well, as a random example, sure, right. But those are super popular.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mormolas are so popular and created by, of course, the legendary Kate Baker, that she is the PaizoCon guest of honor, which I think is awesome. It's like the girl who brought us psychedelic walrus people that worship pain, you know, I'm glad she's getting her due. So
absolutely. Shout out to Kate Baker. She's a great freelancer. She's incredibly creative. I'm really glad to see Paizo reaching out to a successful, popular, current freelancer, as mm-hmm. opposed to always going with people that have maybe been in the industry 20 years and might or might not have done anything that people are think as relevant right now. I think mm-hmm. it's a great move, and I'm really glad to see them do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and definitely. Also, like, a lot of, like, she's doing a lot of Adventure Pass now, but also mm-hmm. her, a lot of her fame in the fandom is through Starfinder Society, and I think that's also good to sort of recognize the importance, not just narratively, but with all the things that Starfinder Society has done for Starfinder, and recognize one of those freelancers as the guest of honor. I think it's great.
I was sitting at a Starfinder Society table, like next to Kate Baker's table, at the first one after like the Sanctuary Drowned Delights came out, mm-hmm. and there was already someone running around that banquet hall in like a Marlamal hoodie, and I was like, "See, look, that's how you know you're famous, Kate. Like, you done it. They're cosplaying you, and your character only existed once in one scenario." I was like, "You're gonna get into an Alien Archive book. You just watch." Mm.
Yeah, I don't think that was I was around when we were deciding whether or not to put more Lamas in an Alien Archive, and it wasn't even really a discussion, right? It was, okay, what should go in here? More Lamas, of course. And then, that's just done.
Right, because, the fans love it. How often do they love things?
I cannot tell you how many times I've been at a convention and looked at Starfinder Society, and someone has a more Lama figure when they've taken one of those little tubes of plastic animals, they've gotten the walrus, and frequently they seem to spray paint it sparkle paint purple and then mm-hmm. glue it to a 2-inch base, and there you are. That the fact that keeps happening over and over and over both tells you that there's a good market for science fantasy pawn boxes, to weekly tie this back to the Alien Archive 3 note, but also that those are a super popular thing. It's like Strawberry Machine Cake. Mm-hmm. I've seen people wearing Strawberry Machine Cake t-shirts from the concerts that don't exist. That is fandom getting engaged with something that was created for Starfinder Society. Mm-hmm. And I think Starfinder Society does a great job of exploring some of the themes of Starfinder, that Starfinder doing one adventure path a month, it does not have the time to hit everything. And those all have to be interconnected. Mm-hmm. And with Starfinder Society, you can say, okay, we're going to do this one adventure on this one theme. And it doesn't have to be part of a set of six. It's just, this is the side quest this time. So
yeah,
I think that's been a huge part of the success of that game.
Michael Van Helsen, a friend of mine, MVH, made this pin for me that is the Starfinder Society badge, which is just fantastic, that I usually wear. So forgot, so I'm going to put it on now. It's just so much fandom getting engaged. And a lot of that, like, I know MVH through Starfinder Society, you know, through Pathfinder and Starfinder Society and the organized play programs. And there's just so much community built around that it's a smart move to.
Well, society's all the memes. I mean, like, Starfinder's the game, and APs are how people like at home connect with it. Mm-hmm. But Starfinder Society, because you're all playing the same missions under the same circumstances, you definitely get that community sense of just like, yeah, those walruses were cool, but they also almost murdered us because that was a rough scenario. or you're just there like, I hope those two actually hook up. Like, you uh-huh. get put into that shared story, and I think that's maybe my favorite part of it.
My favorite part is James mentioned his Gabrani biohacker. That character that character only exists because our local lodge one person decided to start a race war and created a giant civil war between the Gabrani factions. So James' character only exists to remind the other players of what they've done. So he just walks around and casually mentions the genocide that occurred.
My table did fine. It was the other tables in the lodge. They don't get to live that down.
it's so funny. I love it. Just that's the kind of thing I play Starfinder Society for, like that. And yeah, the love interest is great. I love that, those two characters who I won't spoil, but everybody knows who they are.
Back in the day, in the 80s, a lot of the things that were classic D&D modules started as tournament adventures for things like Winter Fantasy and Origins. So you had a very similar setup where people who were, for example, in the RPGA or even before that would play this module as a tournament at a convention. And that created this common narrative of the adventures I've been at and the things I've done. I think it speaks to how many people at Paizo came out of organized play at Wizards of the Coast or have other organized play experience, and how many of them have come up through the organized play ranks at Paizo now that I think Paizo has the largest, most successful, most active organized play campaign. And they're doing it for Pathfinder and for Starfinder and for the card game. It's a really amazing network of players they've put together because RPGs are most successful when people play them. And playing games requires you to find people to play with, and that isn't always easy. So I think it's the fact that we've encouraged people to play, and then they're all playing the same stuff, and then they all enjoy the same things or hate it and talk about it, creates a reinforcing circle that is really an important part of the success of all of the Paizo games.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree. And I think it's a great selling product too, to, as you said, to bring more people in. Every once in a while, I'll talk to people who are like, I'm playing D&D sometimes, but our group can never get together and I haven't played a game in 3 months. And I'm like, why don't you just play some like Pathfinder Society or Starfinder Society? And they're like, wait, what's that? And I'm like, well, you're familiar with those games? Well, yeah, I've heard of them. I'm like, well, there's this episodic way you can play that when you can make it, great. You have a whole story beginning, middle, and end. And when you can't, that's fine. You'll come back the next time and don't worry about it. And people are like, wait, I can just play whenever? I'm like, sure. I talk to people that are like, well, I travel for business. I'm always all over the place. I'm like, great. Play with people in other parts of the country. You're out of town for a week. Find a game there, you know?
Definitely.
Get your boons.
Do it.
Get your regional boons.
Well, I also know a lot of people who move either because they're like out of college or they get a new job or whatever. It can be difficult to find a gaming group, and it is a great way to find a group of people that you know, at least, we have this in common. We all came here to play this game in an organized format. That's a great starting point for getting to know the gaming people in a given community.
Yeah. Nice. The one downside, though, is because a lot of it has to run in like 4 or 5 hours, a lot of it's lower level play. And so sometimes you're just like, I want to play higher level stuff. Like, I want to get up there. I've got a great build that I'm like, yeah, my high level build is, you know, 10th level. And it's like, that's only halfway there. You know, there's a lot more above that. And it's like, yeah, but I'm about to retire the character because that's as high as it goes. And that's why I'm so glad that like Paizo's putting out this Devastation Arc Adventure Path, which starts you, what was it, 13th level?
It was 13. Yeah. It starts you off at level, book one starts you at 13. Fantastic. And we don't know. It's a 3-part adventure path. Mm-hmm. It makes it the second one that we've had so far.
Oh.
The other first one being, of course, Aeon Throne, which is very special to all of us here on No Direction Beyond. And there's also the Signal of Screams. And Devastation Arc is special because it's the first adventure path out of any volume to ever go beyond 12th level. Book one, like we said, starts at 13. And we know that book two is at 16th level when you start. Okay. So, like, who knows where book three could be? It actually hasn't been officially announced yet. So we don't know where it's going to end. But needless to say, no matter where it ends, it's going to be the highest level adventure that Starfinder has.
I mean, if you just do the math, 13 goes to 16, follow it along 19th level, maybe 18th if you slow down.
I can't imagine that it isn't the idea that the final encounter will be 20th level.
Oh, sure.
Right. No one wants to write an adventure that goes to 19th level and stops. They may not have announced it because it is hard to crab that many experience points and that many encounters into a book that size.
Mm-hmm.
So they might be saying, well, we want to do that, but we won't announce it until we're 100% positive we can do it and make it a quality product.
Sure.
But now, I think it's brilliant. And I strongly suspect it will also be set up so that you can say, hey, we don't, from any adventure path that you played previously that got you to around 12th, 13th, here's the hop to get from that to this. Mm-hmm. So if you did Dead Sons and you went up to 12th, 13th level, you can now hop from that to this adventure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even if that's not in the book itself, it would be a really good web supplement or something or blog post to be like, here's how you're going to carry your group over. And if Paizo doesn't do it, you know a fan's gonna. So
definitely. So have you guys gotten to look at the description for these books yet? Like, they are so good. The idea is that there's like this big intergalactic like spaceship that's just appeared in the Pact Rolls system, mm-hmm. and it's like slowly coming for Absalom Station. And so in book one, according to the product description, it sounds like you're going out to like investigate what is going on with this like giant ship, and you do stuff. But apparently, mm-hmm. according to book two, you don't stop it 100% because it suddenly appears in the Pack World system, mm-hmm. and it shuts down the Starstone reactor.
Oh no.
And it throws the entire station into chaos. And so the players have to figure out how to turn the Starstone reactor back online, while also, according to this is a quote from the blurb, while rescuing citizens and dealing with Aslanti spies, angry outsiders, and confused spirits. This sounds amazing. I'm all about this. James, can you imagine playing Attack of the Swarm and then going to this? Like, this would be great.
That would be, I mean, think about it from that character's perspective, though. Everything just gets worse for them. We just got done with one, we got to go to the other. Your work's never done.
Work's never done.
I mean, Shoku would feel the same way from Dead Sons. Like, you know,
adventurer's work is ever done, they retire, right? If you want adventurers to go to 20th level, things have to go wrong.
Yeah. Kitsune Warlock says, for the reactor, have you tried turning it off and on again?
I mean, I imagine you have to fight through the Aslanti spies, angry outsiders, and disconcerned spirits in order to turn it off and on again.
Well, and my memory is that it is canon that no one can get into the Starstone control room, so yeah. You can't reach the switch.
I think right. It even says nobody remembers where it is, because like a lot of the lower decks, like the knowledge of how to navigate those parts of the ship were lost to the gap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, no one knows who put it there, who built the station, and why the Starstone is shoved in there powering the whole thing, so...
Yeah. Like, yeah, people don't have the security clearance. They don't have the codes. No one knows how to get in there. It's like, how do we do this? So, yeah.
You don't know where the button is to turn it off and on again.
Exactly.
You,
yeah.
You've forgotten where the plug is.
I mean, the Starstone is the plug, so...
It would be like having your Wi-Fi reactor somewhere in your house, but you've forgotten where you've put it up, so you can't even turn it off and on again.
All right, listen.
I like the idea of a Wi-Fi reactor.
Yeah, right? That's what I was thinking. That's a very...
access point, but that's fine. No, we've seriously actually had clients that are like that. I do IT for a living. We have clients that are like, yeah, so we have Wi-Fi. I'm like, cool, where's the access point? And they're like, we don't know. You don't know? And they're like, we think it's in the ceiling. So we crawl up in the ceiling and look, not in the ceiling. Where is this thing? I have literally had a client that's had Wi-Fi that we can't manage. We don't know where it is. It's just somewhere in the, it's just permeating the building. It's like the shadow plane and that dim light that permeates everything. It's like, well, there's Wi-Fi here. We don't know where it's coming from, but it's here.
So, not last year, but the year before, 2018, I did a lot of running around and doing conventions. So I can safely tell the story without outing any specific hotel. One of the hotels I was at, I asked if they had Wi-Fi, and the guy at the desk was like, not officially. I was like, okay, is there unofficial Wi-Fi? And he's like, well, here's a router, here's a password, they work. Okay, so why is this unofficial? It's not ours, and we don't know whose it is. Okay, wait. Through your entire hotel, there is Wi-Fi, and you don't know who's providing it. That is correct. Yeah, I'm not logging into that. I have no idea what is going to be in the mystery Wi-Fi that permeates your whole building that has no known origin, right? This is either hacked from someone, designed to hack us, or it is a ghost computer that died somewhere... And its computer spirit carries information with it, and I don't want my computer to be haunted any more than I wanted to get a virus. So I'm out. I'm good. Thank you.
That's how you get into the isekai, though, the video game world. Come on, you're so close. I mean,
so we all know
this hotel. We want to go there so we can get into the video game world.
Yes.
I love you all too much to let you randomly get translated into the ghost universe of computers.
We all know that James would absolutely let a ghost haunt his computer in exchange for Overwatch League.
Definitely.
Like, no questions. Your hesitation.
Definitely. Ghosts are fine.
But yeah, you know what I'm really excited about? The Devastation art books don't actually say like what the extra articles in them are going to be. What kind of player content do you think they're going to be putting in these? Because a lot of the new books have been really good about putting player content in the backs of the Adventure Path volumes, the way that was originally pitched to the community. Like the One Attack of the Swarm article has this beautiful article written by Hillary Moon Murphy that's all about psychic magic. And like, it just makes me wonder, like, what are you going to put into this book? What kind of high level goodies are you going to give me, Jason Keeley, who's no longer in chat because he went to go eat food? Like,
so I believe the very first AP had an artifact in it, Unguratu, which had been translated into a super advanced tactical rifle.
That sounds amazing.
I'm sort of hoping maybe we will see more artifact rules pop up in Starfighter, because we teased it at the very beginning and then really had never did anything with it again.
There's a couple in Armory.
Yes.
There's like the Codex of Infinite Worlds, right?
Right. We keep suggesting that artifacts are a thing.
Yeah, that would be awesome. The last thing I wanted to talk about, speaking of interesting stories and exploring new territory, is all the Starfinder web fiction that's been popping up on Paizo's website. Now, this isn't a product per se. It's free. You just go on to the Paizo website, paizo.com. A lot of it is in amongst the blogs, I believe. Yep. And there's some really good stuff in there. I always joke how Starfinder is so much like... a lot of it is Guardians of the Galaxy, right? It's tongue in cheek. It's kind of silly. It's like bright colors and crazy themes and like cybernetic raccoons shooting assault rifles. But at the same time, you see it from sort of a new perspective with a lot of the web fiction pieces that take on noir, not gnar, or maybe it's noir noirs. And noir. These sort of like darker aspects and this really great storytelling in there. The thing I'm most excited about it is that is how Pathfinder novelization started, is with this free web fiction. And when that was successful, they said, sure, let's do some books. What do you guys think? Any chance of a novelization for Starfinder?
I think that they would absolutely want to do it as soon as they get their publishing stuff together, because didn't somebody tell us that there was like some confusion with like how the books are being published for Tales, and that's why we haven't seen any Pathfinder Tales in a while? Does that sound right? Am I crazy?
Yeah, but if they're stuck in like contract hell essentially with that, the question is it just for Pathfinder stuff? Because Starfinder is a whole different game. Like, they're both Finder, sure. Mm-hmm. They're both by Paizo, sure. But it's a different product line, it's a different IP technically. So
I bet Owen would know that.
Well, so there's stuff I know that I'm still under NDA for, right? Because I was in the building when some of that stuff was going on. So that I can't talk about.
Okay.
And I don't even want to skirt the line on it, because I don't know what is still relevant and what is important. And I would hate to ever say anything that would embarrass the company that paid my health insurance for 5 years, or
I understand.
Possibly we're not asking you to, deal that could be in work.
Yeah, we don't want you.
The thing is that Paizo is not themselves a fiction publisher, right? Mm-hmm. That's not what they do. And it's a very different distribution network, and it's a very different business model. Mm-hmm. And it's a very tough nut to crack. So I've written one of these pieces of short web fiction, and I got that contract from Mark Moreland, who's the franchise manager. And one of the things that he does as franchise manager, for example, is look over all of the continuity and the plot lines of things like the Owlcat games. So he looks at the scripts for the audiobooks when they do those. So I strongly suspect that one of the things that, as franchise manager, Mark Moreland is wanting to do is say, hey, what is something that is inside our control, that is inside our wheelhouse, that we can do to help expand the feel of this universe for ourselves and our fans, and to see if we get any bites from anyone who is in the fiction publishing industry who says, oh, that's interesting, do you all have any more of that? Mm-hmm. I don't know that, because they were not doing these short fiction lines when I was in the company. So that's one of the things my contract and contact came later. So I'm on the outside with that. So I can speculate as opposed to things I was on the inside for. I would guess that Paizo would love to be publishing fiction as long as the fiction makes money. And that's just, those markets are rough. right? There isn't nearly as much tie-in game fiction as there used to be, right? It used to be that the Dragonlance Isles and all of the TSR book lanes were just chock full of game fiction. And there was tie-in fiction for Top Secret SI and World of Darkness, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And not as much of that's created anymore. Green Ronin has Nasaba Press, which is doing more and more tie-in fiction. But that's still a relatively small total output. And Green Ronin comes from a very narrative place, right? That one of their main things is Mutants and Masterminds, which is driven by comics. So that, that whole genre comes from a narrative place.
Mm-hmm.
So I suspect, you know, this is something they can afford to do, that they can control. They do do web articles. They do have people with experience editing fiction. And so I see that as a starting point. Whether it'll lead to anything or not, I would guess that what is going on right at the moment is they've got hopes and plans and nothing is settled yet.
Mm.
Obviously, the more people download it and like it and talk about it, the more likely they are to do more with it. So if you want to see more fiction, check out all the fiction that's currently on Paizo.com and leave positive comments and share it on your social media. None of that costs you anything, but the more you boost the presence of what's there, that is this little tiny taste of what we would all like more of, the more likely I think we all are to get that more.
That's a very good point. I think, yeah.
Indeed.
I'll have to.
Man, one thing I gotta say, I really like Jason Keeley's new one where it's like two Kasatha going on a Starfinder Society mission. Mm-hmm. It, like, if you read that, it feels just like, it's like, it's basically like, oh, come on, it's just gonna be an ordinary dinner meeting. What could possibly go wrong? And then it cuts to everything having already gone wrong. And it's like, wow, it's like you managed to distill Thurston Hillman's narrative style into a short story, and it's amazing. Like, it looks exactly like the type of scenario Thirsty would play. You've got like a cook who wants to rule the world, and it's like, what are you doing, cook? Is he's an Astrozoa? It's like, Thirsty Astrozoa, what are you doing?
Yeah, the one by John Compton, I believe it is also has a similar type of theme to it, where it starts off one way and it ends up in a whole nother kerfuffle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another thing I think is worth keeping in mind when looking at where might this lead is that we know there is now a project going on that's a joint project between Amazon and Paizo, and that is the Play Starfinder skill on the smart speaker.
On Alexa.
And oh, there's a lot, you know, there's...
Name.
Well, I've got one right here, so if I say her name, she'll ask me what I'm doing.
Alexa!
Yeah, I've got earphones in. Yeah.
Damn it.
Oh, Owen's protected you against those. Yeah.
Right. But that means that there is already a potential building Amazon audience for Starfinder fiction of a sort, right? Mm-hmm. Because that is a narrative form of gameplay. And I could easily see someone, be that Paizo or Amazon or some third party that does a lot of Kindle style fiction, saying, okay, as the Play Starfinder skill becomes more and more popular and gets more and more use and makes more and more money, because it will be subscription-based when the full versions come out, is there a market there for fiction that's delivered in a similar manner? And I could easily see that growing into something. And I can't imagine that there aren't people like Mark Moreland who are poking at it right now. And, you know, Mark Moreland, Eric Mona, Amanda Hammond, these are smart people who would like to make more money for the company and for themselves. So I can't imagine they're not looking at it. The question is, what's practical? And that's just not something we'll be able to determine from the outside.
Well, we're just going to have to wait for what comes in the future. The only things that we know are what they've announced. And so we do know some things are really cool that are coming up. Near Space is coming out next month. I'm sure we'll have an entire show going through Near Space once it is released. So stay tuned for the release date on that. Here on No Direction Beyond. Before we wrap up for the evening, what are y'all playing? What are you doing?
Let me think. Right now, I'm doing patch 8.3 in World of Warcraft. That's really fun.
Okay.
You said, is that what you meant, or did you mean like tabletop game?
No, that's fine. I meant more in tabletop gaming, but just in general. Just what are you up to?
James and I are playing Age of Ashes. I'm the GM. James is my player. Our friend Mike went from being a mild manner worshiper of Handspur to a psychotic barbarian. I don't know how I'm gonna handle this.
Okay.
You need Samurai.
He needs a lot of Saren Rae. I don't think Mike wants Saren Rae, though. Saren Rae offered to bring his fighter back when he got murdered, and he was like, I won't accept your Geas in exchange for my life. I'm going to live in the afterlife now. And I'm like, all right, well.
Never wants a Saren Rae.
Yeah, have fun with that. We're doing a lot of Starfinder Society. I traded a friend for a Dragonkin boon, so I'm getting to make a really nerdy Dragonkin Technomancer. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Cool.
And so I have Pathfinder Society this week as long as people sign up. So, right. Yeah, I'm excited to put Sanctuary of Drowned Delight on the schedule. So I'm hoping that I can actually play the Morl Maul scenario because I actually haven't played that one yet. I just know all about it because it's impossible to escape that story.
Okay.
James, at our local lodge, our Mystic took like 250 points of damage in that last fight.
It's a level 3-6 for reference. Like,
yeah,
it's really low level.
It's a bit legendary there for us. Far as gaming, Starfinder Society, Age of Ashes, and also I play in a Mummy's Mask game on Thursday. Mm-hmm. All this stuff is going to be on temporary hiatus because my wife is going to be having a baby in like anywhere between 12 and 110 hours or whatever. She's pretty close to the end of there. So everything kind of goes on hold. But only for a little while. We have a pretty good system lined up, I think. But no plan, surprise contact with the baby. So
yeah, no, the baby.
No plan, surprise contact to the baby.
What about you, Owen? What games are you playing?
I'm not currently playing anything. I am too busy delivering 52 and 52 and working on the next Fantasy Age books for Green Ronin and occasionally doing freelance, which is horribly behind. I've got games that are available to me. There's two first edition Pathfinder games that I've gotten to play in a little bit. And there's someone trying to set up an online Star Wars game for me. It's finding the spare time right now. It turns out delivering a product every week for a year in four different game systems might be challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Who knew?
I mean, yeah, that'd do that. You're delivering four products a week, bud.
Yeah. Yep. I know. Sure am. But the more of those that people buy, the less other freelance I'll have to take, so the more I'll have free time to game. So if you want to hear more game stories from me, buy my stuff or support my Patreon, because I also have a deadline 5 days a week for my blog.
If you give Owen money, he'll give you more story.
It's true.
Oh, there's a good way to look at it. For me, most of my games are playing actually on live actual plays, or not live actual plays, but actual plays over at Roll for Combat. We finished up The Fall of Plaguestone, and now we're rolling right over into an actual play called Three Ring Adventure. It's also Pathfinder 2. And it is the Extinction Curse adventure path. So we're all circus people who are going to try and save the world at some point, because I know it goes all the way to level 20. So I'm curious to see what my, I can't say yet, what my very interesting character is going to get up to by the time she hits level 20. So it should be pretty cool stuff. And that has taken up most of my time. Starfinder, I haven't had a chance to look at lately, except we are about to start recording Stellar again. I know a lot of you folks have been waiting, like, where is Stellar? Where did it go? We did have some internal scheduling stuff and things we had to sort of get through, but now we are back. I've got Stellar sessions to GM back on my schedule, and I'm super excited to be recording those and then editing them and giving them to all you folks to just listen to all of the hilarity that happens when you're fighting against the Aeon Throne and the Aslanti Star Empire. So expect those to be coming back very soon. I don't have a specific release date yet, but by the next time we air No Direction Beyond, I should have a real good date for you. So stay tuned on that. And that's basically most of my gaming, actually. It's just on the good old onlines, which is fantastic because the internet exists. So
yeah, internet is great.
Speaking of the internet being existing, if you have enjoyed this episode, you can continue the conversation about Starfinder, all the fantastic new products coming out, and what's in the future on our Discord channel, one of the least toxic places on the internet to talk about gaming. It's a fantastic crew. You can get there from nodirectionpodcast.com. There is a link on the right side of the page to Discord, as well as a link to support our Patreon. If you like the show and want to support us, throw us a few dollars so we can buy some tacos. Just kidding. No, most of the money actually goes to keeping the site alive. It goes to purchasing art assets so we can have high quality shows and things. So we couldn't do it without you, honestly. There's I think Parham said the other day, like 6 different shows that the network produces, and that's because of Patreon supporters. So if you want to become a supporter, we would certainly appreciate that. And while you're there, definitely checking out those links, tons of blog content from all sorts of No Direction authors, such as those present on the stream. So, all right, any other last minute shout outs before we sign off for the night?
Yeah, I'm doing a Kickstarter right now.
Fantastic. Let's hear about it.
Yeah, it's called the Advanced Occult Guide. It's for Starfinder. And the idea is that, hey, technology and spaceships and stuff is super fun and cool. But what happened to all of the weird, spooky things that go bump into the night, magical things in the Starfinder setting? So the Advanced Occult Guide gives you 3 new classes that you can play. It introduces ritual magic. There are creepy creatures. There are terrible corruptions. Pretty much anything that you would need to tell a story that is anywhere from the horror to the just plain strange genre. Like, one of the things in the book that I really like is there are rules for like really, really big and really, really small creatures and like changing the players to match. So if you want to do a game where your players get shrunk Honey, I Shrunk the Kids style by like a shrink ray, you can do that. Yeah. Or you could do a game where instead of getting the giant robot to fight the kaiju, you turn your players into kaiju to fight the kaiju in a kaiju boxing match. So hey, do what you want. It's fun.
All right, awesome.
We're just shy of halfway to funding. The funding goal is $5,500, and we're at 2880 something like that. And so yeah, we're making progress. I've got about a month to go, and I could use all the help I can get.
And I know that Owen has, we talked about it before, the 52 and 52 products, a new product every week this year. How is that going? You said it was a little difficult to keep up with 4 different systems on the same concept every week.
So I'm still experimenting with the best way to create 4 versions of the same game product.
Okay.
I have literally started with each of the 4 different game systems for things I've done. I've also thought, well, I'll write down everything that has no game rules associated with it, and then I will use that as a template, and I'll try and translate it into 4 different game systems. I think probably I'm going to have to match which game system I start with each product. Just as a random example, runes are a super specific, important part of armor and weapons in Pathfinder 2nd Edition. So if you want a rune system, like we did the rune caster, and we did rune weapons, and we did rune magic all in January, so those are products you can pick up now. If you want that to work with the runes that already exist, you sort of need to start there. And then runes are much less a part of Starfinder, so it is easier to translate from Pathfinder 2nd Edition to Starfinder. But when I was doing gadget crossbows, it was easier to start with Starfinder and then translate that back to the other game systems. So it's just going to vary. But then I've also been talking about converting stuff on my blog, onkcstevens.com, where I've been doing a lot of work taking Pathfinder feats from the core rulebook that never made it to Starfinder and creating Starfinder versions. We did all of those 130 something feats. And now we're looking at extra rule support that you might want to add to a game when you add 130 new feats to it, because that is a huge feat load compared to the number of feats that are currently in Starfinder. And then Rogue Genius Games just released Starfarer's Codex Godling Legacy class, which takes the Pathfinder Godling character class that was actually 4 classes amongst our most popular first edition stuff, and updates them to Starfinder. So if you want to play someone who has a little bit of divine blood, or maybe they touched an ancient alien artifact from 5 million years ago that was made gods, or they accidentally had a little bit of a machine god's code downloaded into their brain, whatever it is, this is for characters that have put 1 foot on the path to becoming gods but aren't there yet.
Yeah, I like the idea of like an android or one of those SROs with just like a little bit of the triune code or something. That's a really cool idea.
Right, that would be a perfect example.
Fantastic.
Cassandra Lee.
And, you know, when I originally announced it, a bunch of people had various gifts of, for example, Thor from the Marvel movies, who is arguably at this point a space god. in the Marvel film. So it's another example where you can take a very fantasy concept, Thor, God of Thunder, and sci-fi him up quite a bit, have him running around in starships and trying to hold open giant shutters to the sun.
That's so cool.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I look forward to looking at that. I know I'm a 52 and 52 subscriber, so a lot of good stuff. I'm interested in the Godlings, so yeah, I'm going to have to look at some of that stuff too. All right, great. I don't think I have anything else of my own to shout out at the moment. Obviously, the Roll for Combat actual plays are super fun, and I think they're really entertaining. And my adventure path from the Threefold Conspiracy, and yours too, Owen, comes out soon. Yours comes out, I believe, next month. And mine's coming out in June. So thank you so much for joining us here on No Direction Beyond, the Starfinder News, Reviews, and Interviews podcast. We've had a ton of fun having you. Please join us live every Wednesday for some sort of No Direction Network's live content, whether that be our main show, No Direction, that covers Pathfinder, or No Direction Beyond, this show where we talk about Starfinder, and also Geek Together, where we are just geeks who geek all together. And without further ado, I'm Vanessa Hoskins.
I'm Alex Gunas.
I'm James.
And I'm Owen Casey Stevens.
Go beyond with no direction.
Bye, folks.